Hello and welcome to Press TV's Debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. You've probably heard this saying about money talks, and perhaps nowhere more apropos in using this term than with the United States' relationship with Saudi Arabia. For U.S. President Donald Trump, Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman can do no wrong, even being responsible for cutting up a person to pieces, as long as the billions of dollars are handed over to Washington. It appears loyalty is up for sale. Before we start the debate, let's cross over to Washington and talk to Press TV's Colin Campbell about reactions in the U.S. media and among politicians about Trump's heaping praise for the Saudi crown prince. Crossing over to Colin. Colin, to give us your take on what is being said over there about Donald Trump's praise for Mohammed bin Salman.
Yeah, Marzia, we understand that there are many lawmakers who have their concerns about the president's relationship with Mohammed bin Salman. Of course, in a recent vote, they rebuked the president's request to give more arms to Saudi Arabia. And this was the first sign that there has been a division between the White House and Congress. Of course, looking at the death of Jamal Khashoggi, and a journalist who lived in the U.S. for a certain period of time, and the way that he was killed is really raising a lot of questions as to why the president is not interrogating this more. In fact, the nation was very much astonished when the president seemed to give excuses for how he was killed very early on. Well, now we're very many months past that, and we still don't have any clarity on what the president has planned or did plan or hasn't planned on speaking with Mohammed bin Salman when it comes to the death of Jamal Khashoggi. And of course, those in media are very concerned about this as well, because then it raises questions as to how much a free press is really respected, needed, and is protected, especially if you have an American president who is seemingly siding with a foreign national who is not for freedom of the press, who will silence dissenters by merely killing them. Of course, there, you know, Mohammed bin Salman says that he had nothing to do with it and that he is removed from that action. But at the same time, there has seemingly been no accountability and definitely no strong determination from the U.S. as to how it should react to this killing, and especially from the White House and President Donald Trump.
Well, Colin Campbell, thanks so much for that update out of D.C. And now let me introduce my guest to the program, lecturer, State University of New York, Carl Grossman, and out of Sag Harbor, okay, author and former U.S. diplomat in Saudi Arabia, Michael Springman, out of Washington, D.C. Thank you both for being with us. Let me start this off with Carl. It appears that Washington has lost even the facade of being a protector and supporter of human rights. So your take on that statement?
Well, I think what is occurring, this relationship between Trump and Mohammed bin Salman over in Osaka in Japan, it is outrageous. Let me just read the top of this. Is an Associated Press story today. For many, he's an international pariah, but you wouldn't know it by the lavish reception Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman has received at the G20 summit this week. He beamed as he stood front and center, sandwiched between President Donald Trump and Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe. The piece goes on. Trump, who has long been loath to scold authoritarian leaders for human rights abuses, seemed to go out of his way at times to shepherd Prince Mohammed, at one point patting him on the back as they walked together. Now, I've been a journalist all my working life. I'm involved in press issues. I was the founder of the Press Club of Long Island, which is now one of the biggest chapters of the Society of Professional Journalists. We're very concerned, the press in the United States, the media, with Trump's attack on the press, describing the press as a enemy of the people. And we're really worried where this is going, to saddle up with, to be so close with this this Saudi prince, considering what he apparently did I mean, the evidence has been building to Jamal Khashoggi, who wrote a column for the Washington Post, is extremely serious. In terms of the prince, let me just note that Agnes Callamard, she's a UN special rapporteur on extrajudicial summary or arbitrary executions. This is what she recently said. They've concluded that Khashoggi was a victim of a deliberate, premeditated execution, an extrajudicial killing for which the state of Saudi Arabia is responsible.
Okay.
And let me just close with, this is, this is the Washington Post. This is a recent story about a CIA investigation of the Khashoggi killings.
Stay with me, Carl. Stay with me, Carl, for a second. Let me just get Michael in on this discussion. I mean, Michael, what does it all mean? First of all, is the relationship between Washington and Riyadh right now different than it had been under previous administrations or not?
Well, only in a degree. The United States and Saudi Arabia have been close since Franklin Roosevelt was president in the 1940s. With the accession of Donald Trump, it's gotten closer because the Saudis have bought, or will be buying, it is said, $110 billion worth of American weapons, presumably to use on Yemen and possibly to use against Iran. The emphasis seems to be on how terrible it is that Jamal Khashoggi was brutally killed, but the American press seems to ignore the three Saudi princes that mysteriously disappeared and the great number of dissidents and journalists, including women. One woman was kidnapped from the Emirates and brought to jail in Saudi Arabia. So the whole thing is Mohammed bin Salman and the tight relationship he has with Donald Trump through Donald Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, who's also fast friends with the Saudi crown prince. So I think in the end, you can say that the American relationship with Saudi Arabia has simply gotten closer over the years, and you can't say that it's all Donald Trump's doing. It mm-hmm. started with Franklin Roosevelt.
Right, and I think that's the important point. Carl, what do you think? Isn't that important to understand? What is it about Saudi Arabia that, as our guest in Washington said, since FDR, there has been a close relationship with Saudi Arabia, and Saudi Arabia has never been the center of democracy and human rights. So doesn't that say something distinctly problematic, one would say, about entities that the U.S. choose to be close to, even though they are not upholders of human rights?
I know this is supposed to be a debate, but let me reinforce what the gentleman from Washington just said. In fact, I have in front of me, this is a recent piece in the Daily Beast. It's an online publication in the U.S. Bowing to the Saudis is a presidential tradition that goes back to FDR, is the headline. And first paragraph, Donald Trump's handling of Jamal Khashoggi's apparently brutal murder in the Saudi consulate in Istanbul is not the first time that an American president has had to maneuver, but it goes on. The reason that FDR, who was a great U.S. president, in my judgment, did it, it got involved so closely with our country, got our country so involved so closely with Saudi Arabia, is it's a three-letter word, oil, O-I-L. That's what the main interest was in. I mean, it goes back. Here's this piece continues. You can look back to FDR's dealings with King Ibn Saud, who created the new state of Saudi Arabia in 19th. It had to do with oil. Today, I think it has to do with oil still, even though the United States, because of fracking, and that's a whole other discussion, the horrible health and environmental impacts of fracking, which is going on all over this country, has become the world leader in the production of petroleum. Nevertheless, though it continues to be oil, the other main factor here is just what the gentleman said, weaponry, arms, a four-letter word, arms.
And the bottom line comes down to both of those is money. I mean, what about that, Michael? I mean, you talked about arms. United States is that desperate from a monetary perspective. Yes, we're talking about billions of dollars, but to the degree that ignoring not only everything that we've been talking about are as far as human rights abuses, that we haven't even talked about the abuses of Saudi Arabia and dealing with the people of Yemen and causing grave suffering there. So what exactly is the deal with the United States? Does it mean they need to sell weapons at any price? Is Washington that desperate?
Well, I don't know that they're that desperate, but Donald Trump has dollar signs in his eyes, as well as the weapons manufacturers, the big, huge corporations that have great sway in the United States. And I think what we've got to look at and what we seem to have lost sight of is that the Saudis have been terribly useful to us besides weapons and oil. They worked with the Bush administrations and Pakistani's inter-services intelligence to recruit, train, and support terrorists for the war in Afghanistan against the Soviet Union. And the Saudis were deeply involved in this. They had a fellow named Badib carry bags of money, freshly minted $100 bills, into Pakistan and hand it over to paymasters there. So I think it's money and it's oil and it's influence, and it's something the United States can work with because there aren't many Arabic speakers. White bread Americans from Iowa stand out in the Middle East like a sore thumb, so the Saudis can do things the Americans can't.
Well, what about that, Carl? The Saudis can do things that Americans can't. And if you agree with that statement, what is it exactly that the Americans, what's their main agenda then in this region when one of their closest allies would be such a heinous regime?
Well, let me just say, as a starting point here, we've been in bed with the Saudi monarchy for decades, but this prince is really something else. I mentioned the CIA report. Just let me read a line. This is from the Washington Post. This is the CIA's conclusion about the murder and the prince's role in it. The accepted position that there is no way this happened without the prince being aware or involved. So in terms of royals from Saudi Arabia, this prince is, and there's been stiff competition, he is absolutely the worst. I mean, the way this journalist was killed, you noted at the beginning of the program, I mean, they sawed up his body in small pieces in the Saudi consulate. It was a brutal, a heinous murder. And it is not the only act of violence this prince has been clearly in the middle of. I mean, and the U.S. yet is embracing him. And you see these pictures coming out of this Osaka meeting of the crown prince with this huge smile on his face and Trump right next to him. I mean, oh, what is happening? As to your question, let me just answer your question, please. But, you know, what can't the U.S. do itself that it needs the Saudis so desperately? I really don't know. I mean, the U.S. is very into, domination. This is nothing new. And it's important for the U.S. to have people in the U.S., Bolton and others, feel the Saudis as a as an ally in this mission. I don't believe this should be the mission of the United States. For 20 years, I was on a commission at the United Nations on disarmament education, conflict resolution, and peace. And I'm a person who believes in negotiations and peoples and nations getting together and making peace. And unfortunately now, again, we've been through some presidents in the United States, and I've lived through these presidencies of the two Bushes and Nixon and so forth. But Trump, it's being said over and over again, he's the worst president the United States has ever had. And I'd agree fully with that. And the policies, these policies in that his administration is pursuing are, well, the worst president the United States has ever had. Is
okay.
Pursuing some of the worst policies the United States has ever had.
All right, well, Michael, though, again, it seems like a lot of people point the finger at Donald Trump. But again, this is not new policy for the United States. As you've said, it's been decades that the support has been very strong. And now it just seems more indicative that the U.S.'s support is for sale. If a country does whatever Washington wants it to do, the U.S. will support it no matter how heinous the country's record may be. Your take on that statement?
Well, I think that it's entirely true. I think what's happened recently is that the coverings, the fig leaves, the diplomatic niceties, the efforts to conceal what the left hand is doing from the right hand have been dropped away, and it's now open, it's blatant, and it's raucous with Trump demanding the Europeans pay more for NATO, which is not a useful organization anymore. And he's now recently been demanding that if shipping in the Persian Gulf wants protection from Iran, they're going to have to pay for it and to have to pay to have American warships patrol the region, which again is absolute nonsense. The threat is not from Iran. The threat is from Saudi Arabia, the Emirates, and Israel, and the United States, of course.
Well, Carl, Trump has praised MBS as a terrific ally. Now, what exactly does that mean when Trump uses that term, terrific ally, about Mohammed bin Salman? What exactly do you think he means?
I don't really know if Trump thinks strategically. I mean, we've discussed FDR, and he thought strategically. With Trump, his ego seems to be the most important element in his behavior. If somebody is friendly, is what he considers warm, I mean, that's why there's a discussion of Trump meeting with the leader of North Korea, that after sending this lovely birthday card to Trump. I mean, he's a person who apparently can be manipulated, can be played easily, if he's sufficiently flattered. This is not a thoughtful man.
Michael, I mean, you're a former diplomat. It appears that the U.S. foreign policy is in spiraling mode, sporadic and based on force, not friendship. Do you think the U.S.'s influence in general is waning in the world?
Well, in a sense it is, but in fact, to some extent, it has too much influence in the world. It's the United States that is constantly stirring the pot in the Middle East, threatening war with Iran, backing Israel in its abuses and apartheid and murder, war crimes, and human rights violations, supporting the Emirates and the Saudis in their repression both at home and abroad, in Yemen, for example. If you can find a strong man or a dictator the United States doesn't like, you'd have to look far and wide to find one. And the American government then is a result of losing its influence ultimately, but in the short term, it's stronger than ever. And I think that you can look at this in the case of former Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, who was fired by tweet. He met the Mexican foreign minister in a restaurant in Washington purely by chance. He had no knowledge that the man was in the country, but the guy was here talking to Jared Kushner sitting in the back of the restaurant. Now, who's running the American foreign policy? Jared Kushner, Donald Trump, or John Bolton, or somebody else like Pompeo? And I don't think Pompeo has that much influence over the Department of State.
Well, Carl, isn't this special relationship with Saudi Arabia, as I said earlier, an American tradition? Now, the Saudis do the Americans' bidding in the region. They buy billions of American planes and weapons, and the U.S. looks in the opposite direction when the Saudis carry out their own repressive agenda, whether inside its own borders or beyond.
Well, I'm sitting here in Sag Harbor, New York. It's 100 miles from the World Trade Center. Considering where the folks on those airplanes were from that hit the World Trade Center and also hit Washington. So, I mean, I've never been satisfied in regard to the claim that the Saudi government wasn't somehow involved in 9/11. But just let me insert now, a major interest of mine through the years, and I've written books on this and done TV programs, has to do with a nuclear apocalypse. And that's the difference with Trump, too. I mean, I'm of a generation growing up in Brooklyn, New York. We had to have duck and cover exercises. We went under our desks because of fear of the Soviet Union or Red China attacking us and so forth. But now, decades later, I'm a university professor. My students aren't as aware about the nature of destructive nature of a nuclear exchange, a nuclear war. Here is Trump talking about things that he's not aware of, talking about obliterating Iran, obliterating, and that's the word he's using, and then saying that if we went to war with Iran, it would happen, all happened very quickly. So clearly to me, he's talking about the use of nuclear weapons. And he's said through almost 3 years he's been president, we have nuclear weapons, why don't we use them? So we're at the precipice now, something beyond just Middle East policy and the United States taking advantage. I mean, a nuclear war and the kind of missilery, the kind of atomic weaponry that the United States has at hand now, some of it, I'd say, would be aimed at Iran. This would be a worldwide catastrophe, a worldwide tragedy. So, I mean, what's involved here isn't just the prince and his involvement in the killing of a journalist, which to me is extraordinarily important as a lifelong journalist.
10 seconds.
What we could be at the brink of is, again, an apocalyptic event affecting the whole world.
All right, and on that note, appreciate both our guests being with us. Lecturer at State University of New York, Carl Grossman, out of New York. Arthur and former U.S. diplomat in Saudi Arabia, Michael Springman, out of Washington, D.C. And as always, viewers, we appreciate you being with us on Another Debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. See you next time.